"Are you often on gate duty, Boffo?" said Carrot pleasantly as they strolled through the Fool's Guild.
"Just about all the time," said Boffo.
"So when did that friend of his, you know, the assassin, visit him?"
"Oh, you know about him, then?" said Boffo.
"Oh, yes," said Carrot.
"About 10 days ago," said Boffo. "It's through here, past the pie range."
He'd forgotten Beano's name, but he did know the room. "He didn't know the number, but he went straight to it," Carrot went on.
"That's right. I expect Dr. Whiteface told you," said Boffo.
"I've spoken to Dr. Whiteface," said Carrot. Angua felt she was beginning to understand the way Carrot asked questions. He asked them by not asking them. He simply told people what he thought or suspected, and they found themselves filling in the details in an attempt to keep up. And he never actually told lies. Boffo pushed open a door and fussed around, lighting a candle.
"Here we are, then," he said. "I'm in charge of this when I'm not on the bloody gate."
"Ye gods," said Angua under her breath. "It's horrible."
"It's very interesting," said Carrot.
"It's historical," said Boffo the clown.
"All those little heads."
They stretched away in the candlelight, shelf on shelf of them, tiny little clown faces, as if a tribe of headhunters had suddenly developed a sophisticated sense of humour and a desire to make the world a better place.
"Eggs," said Carrot. "Ordinary hen's eggs. What you do is you get a hen's egg, and you make a hole in either end, and you blow the egg stuff out, and then a clown paints his makeup on the egg, and that's his official makeup, and no other clown can use it. That's very important. Some faces have been in the same family for generations, you know. Very valuable thing, a clown's face. Isn't that so, Boffo?"
The clown was staring at him.
"How do you know all that?"
"I read it in a book."
Angua picked up an ancient egg. There was a label attached to it, and on the label were a dozen names, all crossed out except the last one. The ink on the earlier ones had faded almost to nothing. She put it down and unconsciously wiped her hand on her tunic.
"What happens if a clown wants to use another clown's face?" she said.
"Oh, we compare all the new eggs with the ones on the shelves," said Boffo. "It's not allowed."
They walked between aisles of faces. Angua fancied she could hear the squelch of a million custard-filled trousers and the echoes of 1,000 honking noses and 1,000,000 grins of faces that weren't smiling. About halfway along was a sort of alcove containing a desk and a chair, a shelf piled with old ledgers, and a workbench covered with crusted pots of paint, scraps of coloured horsehair, sequins, and other odds and ends of the egg painter's specialised art. Carrot picked up a wisp of coloured horsehair and twiddled it thoughtfully.
"But supposing," he said, "that a clown... I mean a clown with his own face. Supposing he used another clown's face."
"Pardon?" said Boffo.
"Supposing you used another clown's makeup," said Angua.
"Oh, that happens all the time," said Boffo. "People are always borrowing slap off each other."
"Slap?" said Angua.
"Makeup," Carrot translated.
"No, I think what the Lance Constable is asking, Boffo, is, could a clown make himself up to look like another clown?"
Boffo's brow wrinkled like someone trying hard to understand an impossible question.
"Pardon? Where's Beano's egg, Boffo?" "That's here on the desk," said Boffo. "You can have a look if you like."
An egg was handed up. It had a blobby red nose and a red wig. Angua saw Carrot hold it up to the light and produce a couple of red strands from his pocket. "But," she said, trying one more time to get Boffo to understand,
"couldn't you wake up one morning and put on makeup so that you looked like a different clown?"
He looked at her. It was hard to tell his expression under the permanently downcast mouth, but as far as she could tell, she might as well have suggested that he performed a specific sex act with a small chicken.
"How could I do that?" he said. "Then I wouldn't be me."
"Someone else might do it, though."
Boffo's buttonhole squirted.
"I don't have to listen to this sort of dirty talk, miss."
"What you're saying, then," said Carrot, "is that no clown would ever make up his face in another clown's, design."
"You're doing it again."
"Yes, but perhaps sometimes by accident, a young clown might perhaps look...
We're all decent people, all right."
"Sorry," said Carrot. "I think I understand. Now, when we found poor Mr. Beano,
He didn't have his clown wig on, but something like that could easily have got knocked off in the river. But his nose... Now, you told Sergeant Colum that someone had taken his nose. His real nose. Could you, said Carrot in the pleasant tones of someone talking to a simpleton, point to your real nose, Boffo? Boffo tapped the big red nose on his face. But that's, Angua began, your real nose, said Carrot. Thank you. The clown wound down a little.
I think you'd better go, he said. I don't like this sort of thing. It upsets me.
Sorry, said Carrot again. It's just that I think I'm having an idea. I wondered about it before, and I'm pretty certain now. I think I know about the person who did it, but I had to see the eggs to be sure.
Are you saying another clown killed him? Said Boffo belligerently. 'Cause if you are, I'm going straight to...
Not exactly, said Carrot. But I can show you the killer's face. He reached down and took something from the debris on the table. Then he turned to Boffo and opened his hand. He had his back to Angua, and she could not quite see what he was holding. But Boffo gave a strangled cry and ran away down the avenue of faces, his big shoes flip-flopping hugely on the stone flags. Thank you, said Carrot, at his retreating back. You've been very helpful. He folded his hands again. Come on, he said. We'd better be going. I don't think we're going to be popular here in a minute or two.
What was that you showed him?
Angua asked as they proceeded with dignity, yet speed, towards the gate.
It was something you came here to find, wasn't it? All that stuff about wanting to see the museum.
I did want to see it. A good copper should always be open to new experiences, said Carrot. They made it to the gate. No vengeful pies floated out of the darkness. Angua leaned against the wall outside. The air smelled sweeter here, which was an unusual thing to say about Ankh-Morpork air, but at least out here people could laugh without getting paid for it.
You didn't show me what frightened him, she said. I showed him a murderer, said Carrot. I'm sorry, I didn't think he'd take it like that. I suppose they're all a bit wound up right now, and it's like dwarfs and tools. Everyone thinks in their own ways. You found the murderer's face in there?
Yes. Carrot opened his hand. It contained a bare egg. He looks like this, he said.
He didn't have a face?
No, you're thinking like a clown. I am very simple, said Carrot, but I think what happened was this. Someone in the assassins wanted a way of getting in and out without being seen. He'd realised there's only a thin wall between the two guilds. He had a room. All he had to do was find out who lived on the other side. Later, he killed Beano, and he took his wig and his nose. His real nose. That's how clowns think. Makeup wouldn't have been hard. You can get that anywhere. He'd walked into the guild, made up to look like Beano. He cut through the wall, then he strolled down to the quad outside the museum, only this time he was dressed as an assassin. He got the... gone, and came back here. He went through the wall again, dressed up as Beano, and strolled away. And then, someone killed him.
Boffo said Beano looked worried, said Angua.
And I thought, that's odd, because you'd have to see a clown right up close to know what his real expression was. But you might notice if the makeup wasn't on quite right, like maybe if it was put on by someone who wasn't used to it. But the important thing is that if another clown sees Beano's face go out of the door, he's seen the person leave. They can't think about someone else wearing that face. It's not how they think. A clown and his makeup are the same thing. Without his makeup, a clown doesn't exist. A clown wouldn't wear another clown's face in the same way a dwarf wouldn't use another dwarf's tools.
Sounds risky, though, said Angua.
It was. It was very risky.
Carrot, what are you going to do now?
I think it might be a good idea to find out whose room was on the other side of the hole, don't you? I think it might belong to Beano's little friend.
In the Assassin's Guild? Just us?
Oh, you've got a point. Carrot looked so crestfallen that Angua gave in.
What time is it? She said.
Carrot very carefully took Captain Vime's presentation watch out of his cloth case. It's a-bing-a-bing, a-bong-bong-bong-bong-bing-bing-bing. They waited patiently until it had finished.
6:45, said Carrot.
Absolutely accurate, too. I put it right by the big sundial in the university. Angua glanced at the sky.
Okay, she said. I can find out, I think. Leave it to me.
How?
I could get out of uniform, couldn't I, and talk my way in as a kitchen's maid's sister or something.
Carrot looked doubtful.
You think that'll work? Can you think of anything better?
Not right now.
Well, then, I'll, look, you go back to the rest of the men, and I'll find somewhere to change into something more suitable.
She didn't have to look around to recognise where the snigger came from. Gaspode had a way of turning up silently like a small puff of methane in a crowded room, and with the latter's distressing ability to fill up all available space.
"Where can you get a change of clothes round here?" said Carrot.
"A good watchman is always ready to improvise," said Angua.
"That little dog is awfully wheezy," said Carrot. "Why does he always follow us around?"
"I really couldn't say."
"He's got a present for you."
Angua risked a glance. Gaspode was holding, but only just, a very large bone in his mouth. It was wider than he was long, and might have belonged to something that died in a tar pit. It was green and furry in places.
"How nice," she said coldly. "Look, you go on, let me see what I can do."
"If you're sure," said Carrot, in a reluctant tone of voice.
"Yes." When he'd gone, Angua headed for the nearest alley. There were only a few minutes to moonrise. Sergeant Colon saluted when Carrot came back, frowning in thought.
"We can go home now, sir," he suggested.
"What? Why?"
"Now it's all sorted out."
"I just said that to waylay suspicion," said Carrot.
"Ah, very clever," said the sergeant quickly. "That's what I thought. He's saying that to waylay suspicion, I thought.
There's still a murderer out there somewhere, or something worse."
Carrot ran his gaze over the ill-assorted soldiery.
"But right now I think we're going to have to sort out this business with the day watch," he said.
People say it's practically a riot up there," said Colon.
"That's why we've got to sort it out."
Colon bit his lip. He was not, as such, a coward. Last year the city had been invaded by a dragon, and he'd actually stood on a rooftop and fired arrows at it while it was bearing down on him with its mouth open, although admittedly he'd had to change his underwear afterwards. But that had been simple. A great big fire-breathing dragon was straightforward. There it was, right in front of you, about to broil you alive. That was all you had to worry about. Admittedly, it was a lot to worry about, but it was simple. It wasn't any kind of mystery.
"We're going to have to sort it out," he said.
"Yes."
"Oh, good. I like sorting things out."
Foul Old Ron was a Beggars Guild member in good standing. He was a mutterer, and a good one. He would walk behind people muttering in his own private language until they gave him money not to. People thought he was mad, but this was not technically the case. It was just that he was in touch with reality on the cosmic level and had a bit of trouble focusing on things smaller, like other people, walls, and soap. Although on very small things, such as coins, his eyesight was grade A. Therefore, he was not surprised when a handsome young woman streaked past him and removed all her clothes. This sort of thing happened all the time, although up until now only on the inner side of his head. Then he saw what happened next. He watched as the sleek golden shape streaked away.
I told him, he said. I'll give him the wrong end of a ragman's trumpet, so I shall. Bugger him, millennium hand and shrimp, I told him.
Gaspode wagged what was technically a tail when Angua re-emerged.
Change into something more suitable, he said,
his voice slightly muffled by the bone.
Good one. I brung you this little token.
He dropped it on the cobbles. It didn't look any better to Angua's lupine eyes.
What for? She said.
Stuffed with nourishing marabon jelly, that bone, he said accusingly.
Forget it, said Angua. Now, how do you normally get into the Assassin's Guild?
And maybe afterwards we could kind of hang out in the middens along Phaedra Road, said Gaspode,
his stump of a tail still thumping the ground.
There's rats along there that'll make your hair stand on it. No? All right, forget I mentioned it.
He finished quickly, when fire flashed for a moment in Angua's eyes. He sighed.
There's a drain by the kitchens, he said.
Big enough for a human?
Not even for a dwarf, but it won't be worth it. It's spaghetti tonight. You don't get many bones in spaghetti.
Come on.
He limped along.
That were a good bone, he said. Hardly even started going green, eh? I bet you wouldn't say no to a box of chocolates from Mr. Hunk, though.
He cringed as she rounded on him.
"What are you talking about?"
"Nothing, nothing."
He trailed after her, whining. Angua wasn't happy either. It was always a problem growing her hair and fangs every full moon. Just when she thought she'd been lucky before, she'd found that few men are happy in a relationship where their partner grows hair and howls. She'd sworn no more entanglements like that. As for Gaspode, he was resigning himself to a life without love, or at least any more than the practical affection experienced so far, which had consisted of an unsuspecting chihuahua and a brief liaison with a postman's leg. The number one powder slid down the folded paper into the metal tube. Blast Vimes, who'd have thought he'd actually head for the opera house? He'd lost a set of tubes up there. But there were still three left, packed neatly in the hollow stock. A bag of number one powder and a rudimentary knowledge of lead casting was all a man needed to rule the city. The gun lay on the table. There was a bluish sheen to the metal, or perhaps not so much a sheen as a glisten. And of course, that was only the oil. You had to believe it was only the oil. It was clearly a thing of metal. It couldn't possibly be alive. And yet... and yet...
"They say it was only a beggar girl in the guild." "Well, what of it? She was a target of opportunity. That was not my fault, that was your fault. I am merely the gong. Gongs don't kill people. People kill people." "You killed Hammerhock. The boy said you fired yourself and he'd repaired you." "You expect gratitude? He would have made another gong." "Was that a reason to kill him?"
"Certainly. You have no understanding."
Was the voice in his head or in the gong? He couldn't be certain. Edward had said there was a voice. It said that everything you wanted, it could give you. Getting into the guild was easy for Angua, even through the angry crowds. Some of the assassins, the ones from noble homes that had big floppy dogs around the place in the same way that lesser folks have rugs, had brought a few with them. Besides, Angua was pure pedigree. She drew admiring glances as she trotted through the buildings. Finding the right corridor was easy, too. She'd remembered the view from the guild next door, and counted the number of floors. In any case, she didn't have to look hard. The reek of fireworks hung in the air all along the corridor. There was a crowd of assassins in the corridor, too. The door of the room had been forced open. As Angua appeared around the corner, she saw Dr. Cruces emerge, his face suffused with rage.
"Mr. Downey?"
A white-haired assassin drew himself to attention.
"Sir?"
"I want him found."
"Yes, Doctor."
"In fact, I want him inhumed, with extreme impoliteness, and I'm setting the fee at $10,000. I shall pay it personally, you understand, without guild tax either."
Several assassins nonchalantly strolled away from the crowd. $10,000 untaxed dollars was good money. Downey looked uncomfortable.
"Doctor, I think..."
"Think? You're not paid to think. Heaven knows where the idiot has got to. I ordered the guild searched. Why didn't anyone force the door?"
"Sorry, Doctor. Edward left us weeks ago and I didn't think..."
"You didn't think? What are you paid for?"
"Never seen him in such a temper," said Gaspode.
There was a cough behind the chief assassin. Dr. Whiteface had emerged from the room.
"Ah, Doctor," said Dr. Cruces, "I think perhaps we'd better go and discuss this further in my study, yes?"
"I really am most terribly sorry, my lord."
"Don't mention it. The little devil has made us both look like fools. Nothing personal, of course. Mr. Downey, the fools and the assassins will be guarding this hole until we can get some masons in tomorrow. No one is to go through, you understand?"
"Yes, Doctor."
"Very well."
"That's Mr. Downey," said Gaspode, as Dr. Cruces and the chief clown disappeared down the corridor. "Number two in the assassins." He scratched his ear. "He'd knock off old Cruces for tuppence if he weren't against the rules."
Angua trotted forward. Downey, who was wiping his forehead with a black handkerchief, looked down.
"Hello, you're new," he said.
He glanced at Gaspode.
"And the mutt's back, I see."
"Woof, woof," said Gaspode, his stump of a tail thumping the floor. "Incidentally," he added, for Angua's benefit, "he's often good for a peppermint if you catch him in the right mood. He's poisoned 15 people this year. He's almost as good with poisons as old Cruces."
"Do I need to know that?" said Angua.
Downey patted her on the head.
"Oh, assassins shouldn't kill unless they're being paid. It's these little tips that makes all the difference."
Now Angua was in a position to see the door. There was a name written on a piece of card stuck in a metal bracket. Edward de F.
"Edward de F," she said.
"There's a name that tolls a bell," said Gaspode. "Family used to live up Kingsway. Used to be as rich as Creosote."
"Who was Creosote?"
"Some foreign bugger who was rich."
"Oh.
But great-granddad had a terrible thirst, and granddad chased anything in a dress. His dress, you understand. And old Death, well, he was sober and clean, but lost the rest of the family money on account of having a blind spot when it came to telling the difference between a 1 and an 11.
"I can't see how that loses you money."
"It does if you think you can play cripple Mr. Onion with the big boys."
The werewolf and the dog padded back down the corridor.
"Do you know anything about Master Edward?" said Angua.
"No. The house was flogged off recently. Family debts. Haven't seen him around."
"You're certainly a mine of information," she said.
"I gets around. No one notices dogs."
Gaspode wrinkled his nose. It looked like a withered truffle.
"Blimey, stinks of gone, doesn't it?"
"Yes, something odd about that," said Angua.
"What?"
"Something not right."
There were other smells. Unwashed socks, other dogs, Dr. Whiteface's grease paint, yesterday's dinner. The scents filled the air, but the firework smell of what Angua was now automatically thinking of as the gone wound around everything else, acrid as acid.
"What's not right?"
"Don't know. Maybe it's the gone smell."
"Nah, that started off here. The gone was kept here for years."
"Right. OK, well, we've got a name. It might mean something to Carrot."
Angua trotted down the stairs.
"Excuse me," said Gaspode.
"Yes?"
"How can you turn back into a woman again?"
"I just get out of the moonlight and, concentrate. That's how it works."
"Cure, that's all?"
"If it's technically full moon, I can change even during the day if I want to. I only have to change when I'm in the moonlight."
"Get away. What about wolfbane?"
"Wolfbane? It's a plant. A type of aconite, I think. What about it?"
"Don't it kill you?"
"Look, you don't have to believe everything you hear about werewolves. We're human, just like everyone else. Most of the time," she added.
By now they were outside the guild and heading for the alley, which indeed they reached, but it lacked certain important features that it had included when they were last there. Most notable of these was Angua's uniform. But there was also a world shortage of foul old Ron.
"Damn!"
They looked at the empty patch of mud.
"Got any other clothes?" said Gaspode.
"Yes, but only back in Elm Street. This is my only uniform."
"You have to put some clothes on when you're a human?"
"Yes."
"Why, I would have thought a nude woman would be at home in any company, no offence meant."
"I prefer clothes."
Gaspode sniffed at the dirt.
"Come on, then," he sighed. "We'd better catch up foul old Ron before your chainmail becomes a bottle of bear huggers. Yes?"
Angua looked around. The scent of foul old Ron was practically tangible.
"All right, but let's be quick about it."
"Wolfbane. You didn't need daft old herbs to make your life a problem if you spent 1 week every month with 2 extra legs and 4 extra nipples." There were crowds around the Patrician's Palace and outside the Assassin's Guild. A lot of beggars were in evidence. They looked ugly. Looking ugly is a beggar's stock in trade, in any case. These looked uglier than necessary. The militia peered around a corner.
"There's hundreds of people," said Colon, "and loads of trolls outside the day watch."
"Where's the crowd thickest?" said Carrot.
"Anywhere the trolls are," said Colon. He remembered himself. "Only joking," he added.
"Very well," said Carrot. "Everyone follow me."
The babble stopped as the militia marched, lumbered, trotted, and knuckled towards the day watch house. A couple of very large trolls blocked the way. The crowd watched in expectant silence. Any minute now, Colon thought, someone's going to throw something, and then we're all going to die. He glanced up. Slowly and jerkily, gargoyle heads were appearing along the gutters. No one wanted to miss a good fight. Carrot nodded at the two trolls. They'd got lichen all over them, Colon noticed.
"It's Blue John and Bauxite, isn't it?" said Carrot.
Blue John, despite himself, nodded. Bauxite was tougher and merely glared.
"You're just the sort I was looking for,"
Carrot went on. Colon gripped his helmet like a size 10 limpet trying to crawl up a size 1 shell. Bauxite was an avalanche with feet.
"You're conscripted," said Carrot.
Colon peeked out from under the brim. "Report to Corporal Nobbs for your weapons. Lance Constable Detritus will administer the oath." He stood back. "Welcome to Citizen's Watch. Remember, every Lance Constable has a Field Marshal's baton in his knapsack." The trolls hadn't moved.
"Ain't gonna be in a watch," said Bauxite.
"Officer material, if ever I saw it," said Carrot.
"Hey, you can't put them in the watch," shouted a dwarf from the crowd.
"Why, hello, Mr. Strong in the Arm," said Carrot. "Good to see community leaders here. Why can't they be in the militia?"
All the trolls listened intently. Strong in the Arm realised that he was suddenly the centre of attention and hesitated.
"Well, you've only got one dwarf, for one thing," he began.
"I'm a dwarf," said Carrot, "technically."
Strong in the Arm looked a little nervous. The whole issue of Carrot's keenly embraced dwarfishness was a difficult one for the more politically minded dwarfs.
"You're a bit big," he said lamely.
"Big? What's size got to do with being a dwarf?" Carrot demanded.
A lot," whispered Cuddy.
"Good point," said Carrot. "That's a good point." He scanned the faces. "Right. We need some honest, law-abiding dwarfs. You there?"
"Me?"
said an unwary dwarf. "Have you got any previous convictions?"
"Well, I don't know. I suppose I used to believe very firmly that a penny saved is a penny earned."
"Good. And I'll take you two, and you, four more dwarfs. Yes, can't complain about that, eh?"
"Ain't gonna be in a watch," said Bauxite again, but uncertainty modulated his tone.
"You trolls can't leave now," said Detritus. "Otherwise too many dwarfs. That's numbers, that is."
"I'm not joining any watch," said a dwarf. "Not man enough, eh?" said Cuddy. "What? I'm as good as a bloody troll any day."
"Right, that's sorted out then," said Carrot, rubbing his hands together. "Acting Constable Cuddy?"
"Sir?"
"Hey," said Detritus. "How come he suddenly full constable?" "Since he was in charge of the dwarf recruits," said Carrot, "and you're in charge of the troll recruits, Acting Constable Detritus."
"I full acting constable in charge of the troll recruits?"
"Of course. Now, if you would step out of the way, Lance Constable Bauxite."
Behind Carrot, Detritus drew a big, proud breath.
"Ain't gonna...
Lance Constable Bauxite, you horrible big troll, you stand up straight, you saluting right now, you stepping out the way of Corporal Carrot, you two troll, you come here, 1, 2, 3, 4, you in the watch now, I cannot believe it, what my eye is seeing, where are you from, Bauxite?"
"Slice Mountain, but..."
Slice Mountain, only..."
Detritus looked at his fingers for a moment and rammed them behind his back.
"Only... Two things come from Slice Mountain, rocks, and he struck out wildly. "Other sorts of rocks. What kind you, Bauxite?"
"What the hell's going on here?"